Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Today's episode of Read Me Romance is brought to you by hitting the reverse camera button by accident on your cell phone and seeing a depressed rhino staring back. It's just the lighting. Hey, lady listeners. It's Tessa Bailey. We're here for the fourth installment of Our Last Chance by Molly O'Keefe. This one's heating up. I know you guys are dying to get to it. I always say this, and it's always true. But I have a couple of lady listener emails that I'm going to go ahead and read you. This is a summer camp one. It's called The Honey Packet, which sounds like, it sounds like an Alexa Riley book. I feel like they need a, yeah, like a book called The Honey Spot or The Honey Packet. Maybe they do. They probably already do. Okay. I was at a high school church summer camp, and I was leaving the mess hall after lunch, and a fairly cute boy tossed something down on the ground just as I walked past him. And he says, "Excuse me, miss, but you seem to have dropped your name tag." And I look down, and he has a honey packet in his hand. My teenage heart melted that this cute boy would notice me, and even if the pickup line was cheesy, it was still sweet, haha. I was reaching for the packet in his hand and about to get all swoony when he says, "Oh wait, someone else is coming by, I need this," and snatches the packet back to do the same thing to a different girl passing. I scoffed and rolled my eyes and just kept walking. I wasn't crushed and was laughing about it pretty quickly afterwards, so no hard feelings. I feel like Leah is, hopefully Leah's listening to this because she has been the recipient of so many terrible and wonderful pickup lines that I feel like I need to know if she's had this one happen to her because I feel like it's so creative. You drop something and then you drop your name tag and you look down and it's a honey packet. That's adorable. But also, I hope he got his. No, just kidding. Kids will be kids. Okay. She also went on to say a lot of nice things about heat stroke. So thank you, Kristen. That was really sweet. Yeah. Keep up the great work, ladies. I'm still playing catch up on the podcast and trying to listen to as many episodes as I can. So be up to date. You all are awesome. Thanks again, Kristen. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Guys, while you're at it, like while you're listening, make sure you tell a friend about the podcast so we can keep this going. As of now, we have it going through January 2020, but you know, we just have to see what happens between now and then. And like, we'd like to keep doing it. Just the more, the merrier, the more people we get listening, the, you know, the better chances are that we can keep this going because we love doing it. And I hope you guys like it too. Okay. Here's another one. Hello, my lovely podcasters. So my summer camp story is more of a youth group retreat with my church. I was 15 years old at the time, and we went into the Blue Ridge Mountains to a mission camp where we would help build homes for poverty-stricken families or just help with stuff people needed done around their property. That's so nice. I have so many stories from this 1 week we spent there. I could go on forever, but I will stick with the best one. So it's like July in the Blue Ridge, and it is so hot and sticky outside at this camp. For some reason or another, our group got stuck with these old isolated cabins that didn't get air conditioning really well. The guys had one cabin and the girls had the other. They were literally right across the way from each other, maybe no more than 20 feet. And then we had a separate shower house that had a guy and a girl side farther up the hill we were put on. The whole group of us are teenagers with a smattering of a couple adults who totally let us goof off. Well, all the guys were constantly bragging about how great the Gold Bond powder they were putting in their underwear felt to keep the chafing away. Let me quote one of the guys on the trip who said, "It's like a breath mint in your underpants." Every time they came out of the bathroom shower house or their cabin, they were always bragging. Well, the girls were tired of hearing about it, so we stole the powder when all the guys were down in the recreation area. I got the bright idea to bribe the kitchen staff at the camp to let us into the kitchen that night after hours, and we replaced the powder with salt, garlic powder, and onion powder. Then we used our stealth, returned the bottle, and waited with bated breath for our prank to go off. Well, the first person to use it was my youth pastor. The next morning after his shower, we all heard his yell from the shower house in our cabin. We died laughing. Of course, being teenagers, the guys could not let this go unpunished, so they decided to ambush us while we were all in our cabin with every creepy crawler they could find. I would kill somebody for bringing a spider at me. I swear I would not care what I had done to them. That is like a, oh my gosh, that's my hard limit. The guys, including our youth pastor, rushed into our cabin holding snakes, frogs, daddy longlegs spiders, etc., and scared the ever-loving shit out of us. The pranks didn't end there, and it is still one of the funniest weeks I recall of my teenage years. Oh my god. A snake? No. I would be in the first taxi cab back to my house. But that sounds hilarious, and it sounds like you had a pretty cool, like, church. That's hilarious. And also, like, points for the effort. Bribing the kitchen staff, getting everything replaced, sneaking out the bottle, sneaking it back in. Like, you definitely earned that moment. As for the romance novel that changed my life, this is Aaron again. It was Goddess of Spring by PC Cast. It was the first romance novel I had ever read and found it on a whim at Goodwill when I was 19. It completely opened my eyes to everything romance. I'm a complete romantic and just fell in love with this story and the whole genre. I totally remember reading the sex scenes and thinking, holy shit, people write this in books? I've been seriously missing out. I love, love, love stories and never get enough. And thanks to all the awesome books and authors this podcast has introduced to me, and my sex life with my husband is better than ever. Yay! I love hearing that. Okay. Thanks, lady listeners, for writing in. We always want your stories, whether they're wedding disasters, sex mishap, writing questions, camp disasters. We want everything. We love hearing from you. So thanks for writing in. And now I'm going to send you into the final installment of, or sorry, not the final installment, the fourth installment of our last chance, sorry, by Molly O'Keefe. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you when it's over.
Chapter 6. Natalie. After 10 days, we'd fallen into a rhythm, and it was awesome in so many ways. The bar was crowded with all kinds of people. My menu additions weren't more popular than wings. That was never going to happen. But the whole menu was getting ordered, so we were wasting less food, keeping things fresh. At the end of every night, B poured me a shiner and I sat at the bar and watched Jack count the money and felt like I was doing all the right things. And then I'd head home to my lonely hotel room, and 20 minutes later, Jack would knock on my door. And the sex we had pulled me apart, tore me inside out. It didn't matter what I said to him. He said nothing to me. "Please," I said Friday night when he showed up at my door. "Let's talk. Have a drink." He shook his head and turned like he was going to leave, like the price of talking to me was too high to pay. And I was the fool, the broken woman so in love, so painfully in love with a man who was using my body until our time was up, that I didn't let him leave. I couldn't, because I needed every minute to convince him. And if I couldn't, I needed every minute to keep me warm in the cold, lonely years ahead. "Hey," B said on Saturday morning. The bar was clean and bright with golden sunlight filling the corners. And I sat in all that sunlight and shivered. I was cold to my bones. "Do you think we should do a Sunday brunch?" "I think Sunday brunch is an amazing idea. Great way to train new kitchen staff."
"New?"
I blinked away the tears burning in my eyes. 4 days left and I was no closer to winning him back. "You'll need new staff. We're really popular," I said. "And Mark can't do it all when I'm gone."
"Gone?"
she asked and put down the case of beer she was loading into the fridges.
"You're leaving."
"I'm not winning him back," I whispered. "He's here, but he's too far away. Further away than ever."
"Have you tried, you know?"
She waggled her eyebrows and whistled. And somehow I couldn't tell her about how he'd been in my hotel room the last 9 nights, how he fucked me and left me. It felt humiliating and sad. But I nodded.
"Oh, honey," she whispered. "Honey, come on. Jack is dumb, but he's not stupid. You're the best thing that's ever happened to him."
"Tell him that," I said. And then, because the day was just beginning and the work was never ending, I shook myself out of my self-pity and stood up off my bar stool.
"Has he taken you to see his land?" B asked, watching me carefully.
"No, he hasn't even taken me to his house."
"Well, his house is gross. You want no part of that. But the land he bought when he bought this place."
"Ask him to show you. He's not going to," I said.
because I knew what that land was. It was where he'd planned to build our house. It's where he'd planned to raise our children and grow old. He shows that land to anyone who shows even the smallest amount of interest. He shows that land to people who actively don't want to see it. He won't be able to resist showing you the land. Trust me. I shook my head because I couldn't see it happening. His anger toward me was too strong, too deep. I'd been foolish to think I could win him over. So I'd finish my 2 weeks, and I'd leave him with this gift, this new bar, with the new menu and energy. I'd leave him wreathed in our dream as best I could, and then I would sign his papers, wish him good luck, and move on to what I couldn't even begin to imagine. "Hey, chef," Mark said when I walked into the kitchen and I smiled at him. I didn't tell him to do that. Gordon Ramsay did. "Hey, Mark, ready to work?" He rattled off what he'd done already and I smiled. The kid would do fine, just fine. 2 hours later, I stepped out to the restaurant to see the late afternoon crowd coming in, including Cody, who sat at the corner of the bar. Jack, not B, was behind it, pouring pints and laughing at something Cody was saying. Jack was a quiet man, but far from humorless. In the early days, when we were kids, he was the jokester. I would pee my pants laughing while he kept a straight face. It used to be when I walked into a room, he would light up. His face would relax. His lips would twitch. He would smile so bright, for me, because seeing me made him happy. I didn't do that for him anymore. I slipped in beside Cody, expecting Jack to go stern and quiet, but he poured me a big Diet Coke, my afternoon treat, and kept on smiling.
"Well, Natty," Cody said,
putting his arm along the back of my chair,
"how does it feel to have changed not just the bar, but the entire town?"
"Oh, God," I laughed. "I didn't do that."
"Yes, you did," Jack said,
his hands braced wide against the wood between us. It was so definite there was no point arguing with him.
"We have 3 Christmas parties booked here," he said. "Do you want to know how many Christmas parties we had booked here last year?"
"How many?"
"None. Not even ours."
I got caught in his gaze, tangled up in pride and longing. "Well," I said, "I guess I'm really happy."
"And I'm really happy too," Cody said, "because you won't be making us go to some freezing cold bonfire out on your land for your Christmas party."
"It was beautiful and festive," Jack said, turning away to pour another pint for the orders Kimmy was bringing in.
"Christmas lights thrown in trees does not make things festive and beautiful."
"Yeah, it does," I said, and Jack made a gesture toward me like, "see, she gets it." "Did you have s'mores? Dogs on sticks? Spiked cider?" I asked.
"No,"
Cody said.
"We had freezing cold beer and bags of chips."
I winced. "Honey," I said to Jack. And as soon as the words slipped out of my mouth, I knew I'd made a mistake. All the easy air between us turned brittle and cold. Jack turned away again, futzing with something on the other side of the bar, and Cody sighed heavily. But I was in it at this point. I had nothing to lose. Nothing. The one thing I wanted in this world was slipping out of my hands. "I'd like to see the land," I said. And there was a tiny pause in Jack's movements, a sudden stiffness in his shoulders.
"Not much to see," he said.
"I've heard it's real pretty." He walked away without another word.
Chapter 7. Jack. Everything was changing. It had been 10 days, but if I was honest with myself, things had started changing the day after she showed up. People were coming to the bar on dates. A whole different kind of after-work crowd was filling up happy hour. It was the end of Saturday night, and I'd only thrown out 2 people. 2. She'd been here 10 days. What would happen if she stayed for good? That question was one I'd been asking myself in all the quiet moments, when my brain went still and I wasn't planning or fixing anything and I was just living. When I was just living, I thought of her, my wife. Why did I force her to choose between her dream and me? Why didn't I see that that was what I'd been doing? That thought spun in my brain so consistently there were grooves worn in my gray matter. It was endless, wondering if all this time I'd been wrong, if all this time I'd only been seeing things my way. And my way was far from the whole picture. We'd been so young, and I'd been so stubborn. She'd been a good daughter, grieving the loss of her mother, and maybe she just wanted a little more. A chance for something better, something for us, not just for her. And I made her choose between that or me, between my version of us or hers. Fuck. Thinking about it made me feel like an ass. I got out of my car and took the now familiar route up to her room. When I knocked, it took a second for the door to open. I was expecting just about anything when she opened the door. A few nights ago, she'd been naked, and I'd fucked her against the wall. My old high school t-shirt had made another appearance. But she'd said I was too rough, and she'd taken it off and folded it neatly, like it was a precious artifact, before dropping to her knees in front of me. My cock was already hard behind my zipper, and my heart was pounding in my chest. And this, sex, the thought of it, the daydream of her, cleared my brain of all my guilt, all my doubt. Sex was simple between us. It always had been, always would be. She opened the door wearing sweatpants and a tank top, the skin of her belly revealed between the two. I wanted, with sudden aching specificity, to kiss her belly, to suck on that skin. And then, from the dark corners of my brain where I'd pushed all the things that could wound me, came the old daydream, the old wish, the fantasy of that sweet belly of hers swollen with our child. "Hey," she said. "Can I come in?" She stepped aside, and I walked inside, closing the door behind me. Keyed up from thoughts of her pregnant, I reached for her, and she came to my arms the way she always had, even when we were kids, sweet and easy. Perfectly. For a second, rattled as I was by the old dream of us starting a family, I just held her and she sighed against my chest. Her body rested fully against me, and we stood there, hugging, breathing. "You want a drink?" she asked. And I almost said yes, because I did want a drink. I would have loved to kick off my boots and lie back on that bed and have a beer and talk to her, like we used to. And that right there, that was the danger, the old dream of her being pregnant with my baby, the old comfort of her in my arms, the weaving of our dreams and plans. But what if it isn't a danger? What if it is just the way it's supposed to be? And I have to trust that we could get it right this time. I was slow to answer, and she stepped back out of touch, her face literally aglow with happiness. "I have some beers in the mini fridge. Or that red wine you like, remember? From that Italian place we went to on our anniversary that year?" She turned away. "I have some cheese, too, if you're hungry. Those spicy olives." All the things I loved. She had them here waiting for a chance to bring them out, to show me all her love with food. The hope inside of me was pushing at all the walls, kicking down all the doors I'd locked it behind. She bent to pull the beer out of the mini fridge, and I slipped my hand down over her ass. Laughing, she swatted me away. She grabbed the beer, and I grabbed her. The bottles, Shiner's Bohemian, another one of my favorites, were cold through my jacket. And I took the six-pack out of her hands and set it on the dresser. "Come on," she said. "Let's have a drink. Talk." I kissed her. I kissed her until she stopped trying to pull away. I kissed her until she sagged against me, her hands in my hair. "Jack," she breathed, "can we talk?" The answer was no. The answer was I couldn't, not without falling apart. Not without leaving myself open to so much pain, or worse, hurting her again with my stubborn pride. I kissed her as I pulled off my jacket and she shook against me. She whispered something I couldn't catch. "What?" I asked against her lips, and my tongue caught something salty against her skin. Natalie was crying. She was crying and trying not to. I leaned back. Natty?
I'm sorry,
she sobbed, and then shook her head, her lips pressed so tight they were white, her eyes squeezed closed. Did I hurt you? I breathed, aghast with myself, and she shook her head again, turning away from me. Stop, baby.
Don't call me that,
she cried and then jerked out of my hands. She stood a foot away from me, her arms around herself.
Please, Jack, please.
I was helpless against this pain of hers, the wall of it that kept me out. I hadn't seen her like this since her mother's funeral. My arms ached to hold her, to comfort her, but when I reached for her, she flinched away. I had hurt her, because that was what I did to her, over and over. The foot between us seemed like a chasm. She wiped her eyes and turned to face me, but it was as if the sight of me brought on more tears, and she looked down at the floor.
I thought I could do this,
she whispered.
I thought I could come back here and I could show you how much I love you.
Pushed by her words, I stepped back. That force field again. My movement made her sob.
I thought I could convince you that I wasn't going to leave,
she said through her tears.
But you don't want to be convinced. You want to be right. And it hurts so much, Jack. It hurts so much to work with you and have sex with you and not be with you.
My heart cracked in two.
It's killing me,
she sobbed.
To love you and have you hate me.
I don't hate you, I said, the truth pulled up from my chest.
It feels that way to me,
she said, and then she dried her eyes and looked right at me.
You want me to go?
It wasn't a question. She was stating the facts as she knew them. She was stating the facts as I had convinced her. Her face trembled and shook, but she kept herself together as I stood there, cowardly and silent. And then she walked to the dresser, opened the top drawer, and pulled out the divorce papers. Don't. The word exploded in my brain like an instinct. Don't sign those papers. But she did.
Here, she said, holding them out to me. You're free. Go. Be happy, Jack. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything.
Natty, I said, looking down at the papers but not taking them. I don't want it to be like this.
No?
She asked, anger lacing her words.
You want to divorce me and keep fucking me? I'm sorry, Jack. I can't do that.
I don't want to hurt you.
Oh, Jack, you fucking liar. All you want is to hurt me, and I can't do it anymore.
Still, I stood there, and finally she took the papers and smashed them into my chest, the papers crinkling and something tearing.
Go,
she said, and I didn't move.
Get out!
She screamed and shoved me. I staggered back and then realized how much I was hurting her just being in this room, and how this had been exactly what I'd planned to do to her. To hurt her so badly, she'd sign the papers. What a fucking monster I was. So I left. I walked out into that hallway with the green and black carpeting, and the door slammed behind me so hard I jumped. Downstairs, I walked past the girl on the night desk whose smile dropped from her lips when she got one look at my face. My truck was where I usually parked it, and by rote, I got inside. But then I sat there, not moving, not leaving. For years, we'd been leaving each other, and suddenly I couldn't do it anymore. I put the papers down on the seat beside me, not even looking at them. And I didn't leave. Not all night.
Hey, lady listeners, I'm back. I hope you enjoyed that. Tomorrow you'll get your happily ever after. Are you excited? I am, and I'll be here with Leah and Mel tomorrow. So everybody will have pants on. And yeah, definitely head to readmeromance.com, go to the current audiobook, and enter to win the 2-month Audible membership that Molly O'Keefe is giving away. Download The Tycoon on Kindle Unlimited. It's connected to this book that you're reading. And yeah, just go immerse yourself in all things Molly O'Keefe. She's fantastic. And we're so excited that if this is your first time hearing her or reading her, that like we're so excited that we got to introduce you. Hopefully it'll be a lifelong relationship. And okay, I think that's it for me. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great night. Love you. Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance.